TFM.
Welcome, Boomers, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Star Trek Enterprise podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I told you to leave the marsupials alone.
But Chris, they were so cute. Come on. How could you not want to play with them? And their saliva can heal everything. So, I mean, how could I not have gotten some samples so that, you know, we could cure pretty much anything and everything known to humankind?
I'm just picturing tubes of marsupial saliva at the drugstore. You grab that off the shelf. Yes. I didn't bring any today, but since, you know, there's a good chance that you may have been bitten by the love bug as you played with those marsupials, yes. I did bring several tubes of Decon Gel E.
Ah, the love bug. And that just makes me think of the Jonas Brothers song called The Love Bug, which is a pretty good song, so...
Is it time to sing, Matthew?
No, I'm not going to sing it for you.
Everyone loves hearing
that's
you
just
sing.
A free shout out for the Jonas Brothers. Go check it out. It's a pretty fun song.
All right. Well, everyone, we're going to continue our 20th anniversary rewatch of Enterprise today with Bounty. It is the 25th episode of season 2, and here is a quick rundown. The Empire never forgets its enemies. That's something Jonathan Archer learns when he decides to trust a surprisingly friendly Tellarite offering vacationing tips. Turns out he's a bounty hunter working for the Klingons who still haven't forgiven Archer for escaping from Rurapinthe. The Enterprise crew sets out on a mission to rescue their captain, but find it difficult to focus while T'Pol runs around the ship in her skivvies trying to mate with everyone. So, Matthew, that leads us to the question of what's the A plot and what's the B plot in this episode? Is it Archer being kidnapped or is it T'Pol going through Pon Farr after being bitten by the love bug?
Well, I definitely think that it's the Archer storyline. That's my thought. Is it that's really the A plot? But I mean, you know, I do think that they play pretty close together with these storylines, especially since, you know, if you've never watched any other Star Trek, if this was your first Star Trek, you know, this is your first introduction to the idea of Pon Farr in the first place. So,
yeah, well, I would say in 2003, if you've never watched any Star Trek and you turn this on, you might check your cable box to find out if you flipped over to Cinemax by accident.
Well, I mean, to me, I think the thing we learned the most about this episode is that, you know, Tellarites make terrible travel agents. And so...
Yes, that's very true. Yeah.
And to bring them back was, I think, a really cool thing to be able to do. Of course, updating the makeup was great as well. I mean, they actually finally mm-hmm. look like an alien race instead of just mm-hmm. pig people. And... to get an insight into them just a little bit. The fact that Archer talks about the idea that, you know, they're kind of ornery, they love a good argument, and just to kind of see, I mean, we've not seen a lot of Tellarites before anyway, but to get a sense that, you know, these Tellarites might not necessarily be your run-of-the-mill average Tellarite. You know, they seem to be different, probably, than a lot of the other Tellarites we might meet later on. And they also, I think, in many ways, they just give us a sense of that they're not too dissimilar to humans, this idea of them being people that are cargo runners, you know, they're bounty hunters. I mean, they do a lot of the same type mm-hmm. of jobs that humans do. And so I think to me, that's one of the most fun things about the episode is honestly to have them back and just be able to get a chance to spend some actual time with them, which, you know, mm-hmm. in all honesty, we've never really done before, except for that Journey to Babel episode in the original series. Otherwise, we've got nothing on these guys other than what you might have heard referenced in like Deep Space Nine or other series.
Yeah. And you see them in the background, like in the Voyage Home, and the Voyage Home one's a bit clearer. I think in the Undiscovered Country, there's a glimpse of a Tellarite. Otherwise, there's been archival footage in Conspiracy and Non Sequitur on the TNG and Voyager. But yeah, we've never delved into them. And Enterprise brought the Andorians back.
Right.
And then they're bringing the Tellarites back, which I thought was great because two of the four biggest founding races, species for the Federation.
Exactly.
And what you say is interesting, that we do see that Tellarites are not so dissimilar from humans. And what I think is interesting about that is that Andorians also have a lot in common with humans.
Right.
And it's the Vulcans who are sort of the odd ones out amongst these worlds that found the Federation. And so the similarities are there, and I think it's great to portray.
Yeah.
Bringing them back. So Michael Westmore, who is so famous for all the makeup work on Star Trek during all the golden years, had wanted to bring the Tellarites back, and there had not been an opportunity to do so. And so this was finally that chance to update the makeup, bring the species back, and try to give them some substance. And if you're curious about kind of the history of how that came together, I did want to mention that there is an episode of The Ready Room, Our Ready Room, from 2015, where Larry Nemechek is on. And he, of course, Larry loves Tellarites, and he was around when all this production was going on, and talked to Mike Westmore about the update and so forth. And that's The Ready Room 183. It's called Breaking Out with a Bad Case of Hooves. And if you go back anyway and listen to our discussion on there, you can get a lot of background about the behind the scenes history of bringing the Tellarites onto Enterprise and updating them. So I wanted to throw that out there, because today we're not going to talk so much about that stuff. But yeah, I really enjoyed seeing the Tellarites back here. And I would say the other thing that I liked about this being the first time we see them and the first time that Archer and the human crew are encountering them is that they don't really know what the stereotypical Tellarite is supposed to be like.
Exactly.
And it makes it easier for Archer to fall for this because, you know, Archer's like, yeah, man, I'd be up for some shore leave. Tell me where to go. And is just very naive about welcoming an alien aboard the ship.
Well, and the other thing that I was thinking, too, is that by introducing the Tellarites, you know, we've introduced the Andorians here. The show, you know, a lot of people make this show seem like that setup for what's coming wasn't happening until, you know, season four, you know, as an idea of like with the coming Federation and all that stuff. Right. But by introducing a Tellarite in this episode, I mean, this episode is by Berman and Braga. They're the ones who wrote this episode. And so they're laying a foundation here for another TOS species that we've never met before. And at least in this show, that's going to be very important to the future moving forward. And so, you know, I think that's something that we should really give them credit for by introducing the Tellarite in this way. I think, like you said, it works perfectly because Archer can be duped. But at the same time, I think it also plays really well with the fact that, yeah, it would make sense for humans to finally meet Tellarites because they're going to be pivotal in the coming together of the Federation. And so and what, you know, an interesting way for them to meet, because obviously by the end of the episode, you know, Archer is helped out, but there's still that bit of unease, right? You can understand as to why the Tellarites and the Vulcans and the Andorians all have these contentious relationships, right? And so, yeah, I think all of that's so great.
So mentioning Berman and Braga, this is a good transition point, I think, to something that we have later on our outline, but would be good to talk about now. The fact that this is, in a sense, the end of an era for Enterprise. This is the next to last episode of the season, and it's the last episode of the original concept of the show before we jump into the Zindi arc. And it's not 100% the last episode, because the final episode of the season is sort of a mix of wrapping up this story and setting up the Zindi story. But as we move into season three, the show changes. And season three and season four have their own distinct characteristics as well. But yet, with this being the end of that original concept for the show, like you say, we do see Berman and Braga bringing in one of the key original series species that will be necessary for leading us into TOS as the storyline evolves. And at this point, the storyline could have potentially continued on for what we came to see as a traditional 7 years of Star Trek, which was, I guess, sort of an accident that it turned out to be that way and it caught on. But I don't know, what are your thoughts on what this story says about the original concept and then the fact that they ended up making such a drastic change in direction?
So I think it's an interesting episode, because obviously this is one that follows up on a previous episode. So we've got the continuity being played there. And of course, like I mentioned, this does play into the fact of meeting the Tellarites for the first time, that would help the future where the series would go, because they would have to meet each other at some point. And I think that this is an interesting episode because they're going to actually utilize this storyline in introducing the Zindi arc, but also it's going to play into season three as well, especially that first episode, because as they're going to the Expanse, they run into the Klingons one more time. And so there is this bridging happening between the ultra serialized season and the, you know, soft serialization that we've been getting. And in what's interesting is, in many ways, this episode, I think, actually starts the major serialization, because everything from here is going to connect, and every episode is going to be a big part of that. Now, you know, there are kind of standalone episodes in some ways that we'll talk about in season three, and yet they all play into the larger whole of the story of the Zindi arc. And so, but really, we don't even know it, but this is the beginning of the Zindi arc, because and even Judgment plays into that as well, because all of that connects to where we're going to go next. And so it's interesting, because I think, I'm guessing by this point, they already knew where they were going in season three. I don't think that, you know, they didn't already know that. And
yeah, it's not like they woke up the next morning and like, we got to just go in another direction now.
We're going in a different direction. you know, they gave that season the pink slip. And so it's interesting because, yeah, the other part of this, too, is that they're trying some bold moves here. To get people to watch the show. You know, UPN is this struggling network, and they're having a really hard time. Is it UPN at this point still, or was it already another network that they had launched? I can't remember.
I think it was, no, it was still UPN at this point.
Yeah, you know, so it's there. The whole thing, I mean, all of this is so interesting because I think there's so much behind the scenes happening that wasn't happening in the other shows because they're on a network instead of in syndication. And so, yeah, I mean, how do you feel about this as you know what's coming? The fact that, you know, Enterprise as we knew it is going to kind of end, and it is going to transition into something very different.
Well, yeah, when I think back to when it first aired, I didn't think anything like this is the end of the original concept. I didn't think of it like that because I'm just watching everything unfold and a story is naturally evolving. And there was no reason to think that it's odd that Earth gets attacked by some unknown alien race, and the Enterprise has to go off on this mission to try to prevent any further damage. Sort of a natural evolution of a storyline.
Right.
So that was okay. It's more like when I look back at it today and I see where they had been going in season two, and then they introduce Tellarites here, and I just, it's sort of a thought exercise of where would we have gone had the ratings been different and had the network been different and the executives had been different, and we had just continued to develop the storyline. I think I can see a natural evolution of where we are right now into the fourth season, more TOS-oriented stories. If you had another season in between where you just let that evolve, that's where I think the season that we're going to be talking about soon here on the show feels like a major detour, and is the reason why Enterprise almost feels like two or even three different series under one name.
I think what you're saying is correct in the sense that, you know, Enterprise, more than any of the other shows, I think has sort of differentiation between the seasons that becomes quite clear. It happens between two and three, and then three and four. And I think, you know, because the first two seasons, I think, feel very similar to one another for the most part. And yet, you know, I think, you know, I just finished showing my wife Star Trek Enterprise for her first time through. And, you know, it's strangely much more cohesive than I remembered. When you actually watch it all together, it doesn't feel quite as jarring. And mainly that's because even throughout season three, they don't forget that they're a Star Trek show. The way that season goes, the way the Zindi arc itself resolves itself, it's very Star Trek. It's not, you know, just gung-ho and, you know, guns blazing and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, you know, season four, it's just the show that really just actually dives into the mythology. It's one of those things where there was a time when superhero films were almost afraid to be like the comics, right? And it seemed like they thought that Star Trek fans wanted Enterprise to be different, radically different, right? When really, I think what fans ended up loving the most about the show is when it really embraced Star Trek mythology.
Right, yeah.
You know, I think we've talked about that many times with the newer shows as well. It's like, when you actually respect the canon and embrace the mythology that's already been built, people respond really well to that. So, yeah, I get exactly what you're saying, because it is hard to talk about the show in some ways because there are these differences. And of course, you know, we had never, other than the end of Deep Space Nine, where all 10 episodes play together is one long episode, basically. They'd never tried this before. In Star Trek. And so, you know, this is their first go at basically, you know, Star Trek Discovery, where everything's connected. The whole season works together as like one big massive story.
Well, that's something I was thinking about, is that, and we'll talk about it a little bit here because we're talking about the concepts. We're getting slightly ahead now as we talk about the third season and that arc. But I think the timing is also important, because we're at a point in television where for shows like this, the style that was popular for so long, like The Next Generation, Voyager, first half of DS9, where you have mostly standalone episodes, that was starting to give way to more serialization. Of course, DS9 really helped push that forward. And then Enterprise, Battlestar Galactica, these shows were coming along and really transitioning storytelling to what we know today, where a typical show is going to be serialized. I think that's where the first season of The Mandalorian especially stands out, because it feels like a throwback to the earlier days, where, of course, you've still got a story going through it, but each individual episode feels like it stands on its own a bit more. And then Strange New Worlds is doing that now with Star Trek. But I think this point where we are right now in Enterprise is an important time in storytelling on television, and things were changing. And so Enterprise is an interesting show because it was caught up in terms of its stability and its instability. It was caught up in a moment in television where it was a part, it was part of a long running franchise that was trying to keep itself going while storytelling and financials and like the early, this was not the first attempt, of course, for Paramount to try to have its own TV network, but finally they did get one off the ground with UPN. But still, that that idea of TV networks on linear television was in flux at this point and starting to, it was the early days of the transition, which has eventually gotten us to where we are now. So I think all that stuff is a big factor in what we're seeing on the screen in Enterprise.
Yeah.
And but then I also think about the original concept and whether what Berman and Braga wanted to do with Enterprise was the right decision or not. Like you said, maybe they thought Star Trek fans wanted something really different from Star Trek, when really Star Trek fans wanted a show that dove into the mythology. I've always felt like it was a little bit more of they wanted to do something different because they had been doing it for so long. If we're going to do another Star Trek series, let's not just put another group of people on a ship and just do it again. Right. Like we're doing the same thing over and over. And I 100% understand that creatively, and I agree with them. And that's, I think, how I would have been inclined to do the series as well. But along the way, again, we've got to tell right here, they're making an effort to make connections bit by bit, more and more as it goes on. And so I just enjoy picturing where it might have gone had we not taken the Zindi detour.
Yeah, I definitely get that as well. I think it would have been an interesting thing. You know, obviously, one of the greatest tragedies in Star Trek, I think, is the fact that we did not get the full seven seasons. You know, I think that these questions would linger less in our minds if that had happened, because a lot more of these type of stories would have been able to happen. You know, I think the continuation of what they were doing in season four would have really built on a lot of the stuff that they had built in the first two seasons, actually, because I think they set up a lot of things. We've talked all about it. And so, you know, I think it's just sad that they didn't do that. And, you know, it's great that, again, this is a place where they were actually building on things that they had already been doing with, you know, the Klingons chasing Archer. And I think all of that really connects very well, especially when you watch the episodes closer together, and it works, you know. And so I really love that. And it would have been great to just be able to have more of this kind of stuff happening on the show. And yeah, it's just cut down way before it should have been. But, you know, you, like, the other side of this episode, so we talked a lot about, you know, the other stuff, but what do you think about introducing the Ponfar and basically T'Pol getting hit by the love bug?
Yeah.
Or would we call it love bug? I mean, love? Is that really what this is?
Well, I felt like, and I put those words on the outline because I felt like in those initial scenes in the decon chamber, it felt like Phlox and T'Pol were both under the influence of this microbe. And so it felt like they had been bitten by the love bug. But then we come to find out that actually the microbe is prematurely triggering T'Pol's mating cycle. So I think one thing that's interesting about this in terms of Ponfar is that if you're going to do a prequel series or this doesn't even have to be in a prequel series. It could be in any series. If you're going to take an element like Ponfar and use that in a story, it's nice if you can build on it and you add texture to this concept. And I think they did that here because up to this point, I believe that we had only ever seen a male Vulcan go through Ponfar, and that caused Ponfar to be seen as kind of like male hormones raging every 7 years or something along those lines, rather than it being a biological process that's part of all Vulcans. And so having it happen to T'Pol here showed that this is something that affects Vulcans in general. It isn't just some male Vulcans have to mate. And also, it showed that it isn't as simple as Vulcans only have sex once every 7 years, which is how a lot of people view Ponfar and talk about it, but rather that it is something in the biology that is not the only time that Vulcans can feel sexual desire or attraction, but it is an important part of some overall cycle in their biology. So I think this episode, as over the top as some of the sexualization of Jolene Blaylock in this episode is, I think that if you just look at what it does for giving us more information about the Vulcans, there actually is something here for that.
I don't know. I thought we were going to talk about the sexualization of Don Billingsley here, because goodness, they definitely made him as a character much sexier than I thought he was.
Well, I mean, I think maybe my memory is wrong, but didn't Star Trek Communicator have a centerfold of Phlox's back?
They had to have, But no, I think that that's one of the things that this episode actually does very well, because, you know, we've gotten bits and pieces about the Nobulan sexuality, of course. Mm-hmm. And so to use this episode as a way to, you know, they have these big open relationships and everything like that, and then to find out that basically Denobulan men are very prudish was such a it seems so funny, right? That would be the case. Mm-hmm. And so that Phlox, who's very open in all of these ways, would kind of be, you know, repressed in any way, I think is quite funny and interesting. Again, you're just adding layers to the Denobulans. And then, of course, like you said, you know, we're adding layers to the Vulcans by showing this to not just be a thing that affects Vulcan males, but all Vulcans. And so, and just how, I think, you know, seeing it here with her, and then, you know, having seen it with Spock, how terrifying it is when you're not in Vulcan society where this is completely understood. You know, it mm-hmm. makes sense as to why, you know, Phlox would not want to take advantage of her, because this is not about really being a consensual thing. It's being driven mm-hmm. by, you know, pure instinct, really. And again, that's very mm-hmm. different than two Vulcans understanding the situation and all of that. So I thought that they actually handled all of that quite well, because in a lot of ways, this episode seemed to actually kind of be about, to me, and it could be akin to, you know, just how we should respect people who are under the influence of some sort of substance, whether it's, you know, mm-hmm. drugs or alcohol, is that, you know, we don't take advantage of people when they're not in their right minds. And so mm-hmm. I actually liked that part of the episode here, because I think they do a really good job of showing the ways in which people should respond to others under the influence. Mm-hmm. And so that was something that's probably, I don't know if it's unintentional to the series here and what they're trying to do, but yeah. It's something I was thinking of as I was watching the episode.
Yeah, I don't know if it's unintentional or if it's intentional. I think it does show how her crewmates respect her. And Phlox, like you say, the stuff about the Nobulans and having the open relationships and all, you would think that maybe Phlox would be not so concerned about these things. But also, I think in his role as the ship's doctor, as her crewmate, obviously he respects her and also wants to make sure that she gets through this safely. But also you see Malcolm, for example, in the spacesuits, and you think back about how there have been quips from Malcolm about T'Pol's bomb and so forth. And like T'Pol tells him in the episode, you know, I see how you look at me. We all know that Malcolm finds T'Pol attractive, but of course in this situation, Malcolm is like, there's something wrong with my crewmate, and he does what they have to do to try to help her. So I think this is all, I think to you and me, it's obviously this is how you should be behaving towards people. But unfortunately in society, not everyone sees things that way. And so I think it's an important message, even if it's an unintentional one. I think that the thing that stands out to me watching this episode today and thinking about when I watched it when it first aired is that the way T'Pol's character is written and portrayed and the way that Jolene Blaylock plays the situation here, I think that it's appropriate for the story and in fact necessary to get across the message of the story, but I don't think it would play well at all today. I think fans would be absolutely up in arms about the sexualization of the character and the portrayal of the character of a woman going through this in the way that it's portrayed. I think it would be done differently if it were done in Star Trek today.
Yeah, I mean, you could be right about that. It's an interesting thought, and I don't know exactly how you would do it differently, but I'm sure it would probably be done differently. And I'm sure that no matter what they did, somebody would complain about it. So, I think to me, though, for the most part, this episode, I think, does a great job of speaking to the reality of the situation that they're in and that she is in. And I think that, when you think about what she's going through, for the most part, there's definitely some, I think, probably gratuitous shots of the character.
There are.
And yet, seems strange for people to be so prudish about something like that when we're supposed to all be so open. I can't understand, where the line is supposed to be if everybody's supposed to be free. And yet at the same time, I don't know. I'm not even going to try to deduce that. But, for the most part, I think the way that the characters respect the character is, I think, the part of this that really stands out to me.
Yeah. Well, I like you say, there are some gratuitous shots, and that's where it's known that they were trying to spice up Star Trek a little bit for television at that time and push the envelope there.
I mean, didn't Discovery do the same exact thing, I think it's the only time we had Klingon boob on the show Star Trek has tried to do this. So,
sure. But I think Discovery doing that, they're doing it in a different time where I think that it's more common and acceptable on TV in general and in Star Trek to do that. I think at the time Enterprise was doing it, it was really, you remember the stories that were in the media about, I remember one writer in a newspaper wrote Enterprise has more underwear shots than a Fruit of the Looms commercial.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I think here, one thing I would have dialed back, especially early in the episode when they're doing the Jill rub down and you've got these close up shots of Jolene's legs, you don't need that
You don't necessarily
portray the situation. And I would have pulled that back. But then there are other elements mm-hmm. of it, which I think, you know, they are appropriate. And if it's something, you know, if you shot a movie about subject matter like that, no one would have anything to say. No one would have a problem with it. It's just when you put it within the context of some television shows that it becomes an issue. But
well, and I do think that
I would just say that it read differently to me watching it than it did watching it back then.
Sure. I think the only thing that, as you mentioned, that I'm thinking, you know, if things were less gratuitous at the beginning and became more so, I think that's probably actually better for the episode and what they're trying to do, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there's ways in which you could have done that, and it's specifically because of the way that you're building the story, like what's actually mm-hmm. happening to Paul. So things get more mm-hmm. and more gratuitous on purpose because she's becoming much freer than she would have been, and therefore mm-hmm. it becomes more shocking because of the situation mm-hmm. that she's in. So,
which I think Jolene does that well in terms of portraying what's going on. It's just a few of the cutaway shots early on that maybe give that impression that they're overly sexualizing things just to get eyeballs on the TV, to get ratings at that time.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, okay, so one last thing that I wanted to mention very shortly before we go is I just wanted to mention that Gowron the Grey is here in this episode because we do get Robert O'Reilly playing Kago here, and I never really recognize him, but his voice mm-hmm. definitely is Gowron.
Yeah, it's just a great way that they reuse actors and that you could put them in the makeup, and they, you know, they do such a great job. But yes, they can have those distinctive voices that reminds you, oh, wait, that's who that is, right? And not a huge role, but fantastic to have him in the episode. I love, you know, having the Deep Space Nine connection.
Yeah. All right. Well, what are your final thoughts and what's your rating for Bounty?
You know, I think this is a good episode. It's not a great episode. I would say it's probably 3 out of 5 Ponfars. It's above average, but I think it's just above that. And, you know, I do like the way that it connects with the rest of the series and where we're going, the connections they have to what's happened previously. I also just love that line from Trip. He's like, call if you need anything. Like, I don't know what's going on in here, and I don't really know if I want to know, which I think Connor just gives perfectly. And so, again, this is an episode I've seen more recently anyway because of rewatching with my wife too. And so, it's not a bad episode. It's just not a great episode. It's just kind of somewhere really mm-hmm. in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. I think same for me. It's an okay episode. It feels like one of those episodes where we've got 26 slots we have to fill. We need a story. What can we put together? Even though it is part of the 3-story arc about Archer being put on trial by the Klingons, it still feels like it has things to throw in, like the Tellarite, which we talked about, which is part of the world building. It gives us more about Vulcans with Ponfar. It furthers the animosity between the humans and the Klingons. But overall, as a story, it just feels like an episode that, if the seasons were shorter, it wouldn't be there because there would be much better material for them to put together. But at any rate, I'm going to give it 9,000 Darseks. The problem with my rating is I don't know what it converts to. So, but anyway, there you go. Just don't tell the episode that it's actually only going to get 6,000 Darseks.
Oof. Yeah. Don't do it. Don't do it.
All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Bounty. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcast. If you're joining for the first time, please answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. If you're trying to find it, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If not, type the whole name, The Babel Conference. Of course, you can also send us email if you prefer. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Warp 5, and that will come right on over to Matthew and me. And you can find us everywhere in social media, including on all the new platforms. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if you would like to help us keep all of this going, everything we're doing on the network, our 20th anniversary Enterprise Rewatch, please visit patreon.com and find out how to support the network. We wouldn't be here without your help. So thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. And if you would like to do so, just visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. Now, Matthew, when you're not enjoying the hydrothermal pools of Rengam, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, I just got back and my skin has never felt so soft. And you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero. Of course, here on the network, you can find me in the 602 Club talking about all of the franchises outside of Star Trek that we love. You can also find me doing Literary Treks, and we're also doing The Orb about the 30th anniversary rewatch of DS9. We've got Saddle Up about Strange New Worlds and The Artificial Tango about Star Trek Picard. You'll find me over on the Nerd Party Network with two shows. One is called Owl Post about Harry Potter and every chapter of that series. You can also find me doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to find that lockpick I gave you so you can get out of those handcuffs, where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm being careful not to swallow that. I don't want to have to pass it like Job in Arrested Development. Now, you can find me, as you mentioned, doing all those shows with you here on the network. There's also Interphase. Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time, which I mentioned earlier in the discussion today. And you can find me in many episodes across a lot of shows in the back catalog. And if you'd like to chat, you can find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. Twitter is where I'm most active, but you can find me on all the new platforms as well, and I'd love to chat with you there. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next time when we're going to dive into The Expanse.
Well, Chris, I can't wait to do that as Enterprise starts in a brand new direction. So let's go.